Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites everythingtrivia.com and onthisday.com. Question number one. Which country artist was originally a professional baseball player before starting a music career? Was that A, Johnny Cash, B, Charlie Pride, C, Willie Nelson, D, Garth Brooks, or E, Dolly Parton? Country artist, originally pro baseball player. Who was that anyway? And question number two, who is the very first rock star to be featured simultaneously on the covers of both Time and Newsweek magazines? Is that A, Buddy Holly, B, Bruce Springsteen, C, Elton John, or D, Madonna? The first rock star to be on the covers of both Time and Newsweek at the same time. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Transitions come to us today from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of October 25th. Well, it turns out this was a big day weekend for classical music birthdays. Composer Giuseppe Scarlatti was born today back in 1685. Scarlatti is perhaps best remembered for his 555 short sonatas for harpsichord, written originally as exercises. Born today in 1685, and Niccolo Paganini was born on this very day back in 1782. This virtuoso classical violinist and composer was known for his awe-inspiring violin playing and such compositions as his Violin Concerto No. 1, born today in 1782. Johann II Strauss was also born on this day, but his B-Day was in 1825. Strauss was known for such compositions as the Blue Danube Waltz, born today in 1825. And composer Georges Bizet was born on this day in 1838. Bizet is perhaps best remembered for his opera, Carmen. Born in 1838, today. And in classical music news, we have this article entitled, The Real Housewives of Classical Music, The Women Behind Bach, Schumann, and Mahler. This is published in KUSC.org, Open Ears by Holly Chung, Ph.D., on the 9th of April, 2024. So many people who made invaluable contributions to classical music were underappreciated in their time, or have been nearly lost to history. That's why KUSC started Open Ears, a series of stories about composers, musicians, and conductors who deserve more recognition. Have you ever wondered what it would have been like to be married to a famous composer? If behind every great man there's a great woman, then behind many great male composers, there was often a gifted female composer or musician. It may surprise you to know that there are over 5,000 known female composers, dating back to 450 BC, but a recent study by Dunn, UK, estimated that just 5% of the works performed on orchestra programs are by women. The wives of composers often supported the careers of their husbands in ways that went unacknowledged. They prepared their music for publication, performed their husbands' music, and even sacrificed their own careers as composers in favor of their husbands. Here are the women behind Bach, Schumann, and Mahler, who rocked classical music history just as much as their husbands did. Anna Magdalena Bach. After his first wife passed away, Bach married the talented singer Anna Magdalena Wilke. The couple met while both were working at the court of Prince Leopold of Anhalt-Köthen. Bach as director of music and Anna Magdalena as a vocalist. Court records show that Anna Magdalena was greatly esteemed as a musician, earning the third highest salary after Bach himself and the concertmaster. The couple soon moved to Leipzig, where Bach took up the prestigious position of cantor and composed his largest works, the St. John and St. Matthew Passions and the Christmas and Easter oratorios. Anna Magdalena continued to perform as a singer after their marriage, often performing Bach's own works, and also produced copies of Bach's works. Her role as a copyist turned out to be pivotal, as some of the earliest known manuscripts of several of Bach's works survive only in copies in her hand, such as the cello suites. Clara Schumann. Known in her own time for her prowess as a concert pianist, Clara Wieck Schumann was also a brilliant composer. During their courtship and early marriage, Clara and Robert expressed a progressive desire to be equal partners in marriage and artistic collaboration, trading themes and making similar types of compositional studies. For instance, a series of preludes and fugues modeled after Bach's. Although Clara stopped composing around 1848, just 8 years into her marriage, she regularly out-earned Robert as a concert artist, bringing in vital income to support their family of eight children, and also premiered and edited many of his works. Her role as a performer of Schumann's works unquestionably increased his exposure and influence as a composer. Then there's Alma Mahler. Born in Vienna in 1879, Alma Mahler lost her beloved father, landscape painter Emil Schindler, at the age of 13. A devotee of Nitschke, with all the baggage that came with that, Alma had been a problematic and contradictory figure. She espoused the anti-Semitic ideas of her day, yet she married two Jewish men. And she was almost pathologically self-absorbed, yet had a captivating intelligence and beauty that caught the eye of many famous admirers, among them Gustav Mahler and architect Walter Gropius. She married her first husband, Gustav Mahler, at the age of 22, on the condition that she give up her aspirations as a composer. Mahler, nearly 20 years her senior, was already well-established in his career and was then the director of the Vienna Court Opera. As the Chicago Tribune put it, Alma gave up almost everything to become a, quote-unquote, housekeeper to a workaholic, serving as his copyist and running the household. Only in 1910, less than a year before his death, did Mahler realize the quality of Alma's work and arrange for a publication of five of her songs. Her music is, by turn, nostalgic and harmonically daring, sometimes using jarring dissonances. Many of Alma's compositions were lost in a house fire in 1947. Her only surviving works consist of 17 songs. And in Music Research and Technology, we have this article titled, The Psychology Behind How Music Can Impact and Change Our Memories. Music is so much more impactful than we think. This is written by Sarah Louise Kelly on the 17th of September, 2024, in HuffingtonPost.co.uk. If you're a music lover, you know that what you listen to can have a profound impact on how you feel and can even be exactly the tool you reach for when going through particularly hard times. However, according to new research, it runs much deeper than this, and music can play a role in how we recall memories and process them. Think for a moment of a particularly poignant scene from film or TV that struck a chord with you. The musical choices used in these specific scenes, whether that be the score or a perfectly chosen song, is called, quote-unquote, mood music, and contributes to setting the mood for the moment. A study from researchers at Georgia Tech School of Psychology found was that even in real life, mood music can actually be powerful enough to change how we remember our own past. This study looked at 44 Georgia Tech students who each listened to film soundtracks while recalling a difficult memory. Researcher Viren explained, "We wanted to start off with a random group of people and see if music has the power to modulate the emotional level of their memories. While this trial was not critical, so the participants weren't identified as people with mood disorders, the researchers did discover that music played a huge role in changing how they reflected on their memories. Not only can music affect the way we remember things, it also has a lasting effect. The next day, those that participated in the study were asked to think of those same memories, but this time without accompanying music. What the researchers found was that the impact of mood music was so strong that the participants still had the same emotional response as they did during the first round of the study the following day." Yurin Ren hopes this will inform future mental health care, Ren said. "These early studies reveal that music can both help and hinder our memory, depending on its familiarity and structure. I'm excited to bring together my lifelong love of music with my interest in human memory, because I think the next phase of my research could provide valuable evidence to support the development of music-based interventions for mental health and cognitive function." We sure hope so.
Time waits for nobody, and nobody waits for time. Life is for the living. All we have to do is shine. today. This is the best day of your life.
Ringo Starr's Time introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled Ringo. 60 years after Ed Sullivan, the Beatles' Heartbeat holds forth on Mop Top Mania and Hope Springing Eternal. This is written by Rob Tannenbaum, AARP, the magazine, January 2024. I'm shaking elbows because I'm getting ready to go on tour, Ringo Starr says, taking the sanitary route to an introduction. We tap elbows, and I tell him, I don't want to go down in history as the guy who killed me, he asks. No, the guy who got you sick and caused a Beatle to cancel his tour, I clarify. We've only met, and I've had an immediate glimpse into Starr's personality and gleeful sense of humor. Starr, who's 83 and a great-grandfather, is sitting inside a West Hollywood bungalow, a short walk from where he lives with actress Barbara Bach, to talk about Rewind Forward, a new four-song EP that includes a new song by Paul McCartney and one co-written by Starr and the All-Star Band. The punningly named Mutable ensemble of rock pros he's led and toured with since 1989. In addition to anchoring the rock band to which all others have been compared, Starr has been making solo albums since 1970 and released 7 consecutive top 10 hit songs in the first half of that decade, including Photograph, which he and George Harrison co-wrote. His former bandmates took some experimental, deeply personal voyages on their solo albums, while Starr pushed on with the Fab Four's mix of rock, country, and R&B, carrying the mantle of a band he still clearly loves. Before he was a Beatle, the former Richard Starkey was a Beatles fan. He was playing with Rory Storm and the Hurricanes, one of the top bands in Liverpool, when he saw the Beatles for the first time in 1960, while both groups were playing dank Hamburg basements. When he was offered the drum chair, he accepted immediately, even though he was joining a less successful band, a choice that has worked out pretty well. Trim and lively, he's precisely what he's always seemed to be, an unpretentious, no-nonsense guy who doesn't take himself seriously except for his music. "My name is Ringo, and I play drums," he said in 2015 when he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a solo artist. But he's also been a film and TV actor. A younger generation know him mostly as Mr. Conductor from the PBS series Shining Time Station, and he has written 3 books, with a 4th coming out soon. Question. There are very strong emotional and cognitive links between music and memory. Are there songs that bring back specific moments in your life? Yeah, and on a daily basis. It could be this song or that one. I have great memories of my stepdad, who was a fan of big bands. When I hear big band music, I think of him. And when I drum, it's always got a swing to it. That's what he gave me all those years ago. I was playing my music to him one day, and he said, "Have you heard this?" And he played Sarah Vaughan. That's a huge memory for me, because he didn't say, "The music you're listening to is bad." I did that with my children, too. That's how important that moment with my stepdad was to me. If my kids played me their music, I'd say, "Have you heard this?" We all learned a lot. When my son Zach, who's now a drummer with The Who, was 9, he came running in with a vinyl record. "You gotta hear this, Dad? It's this guy named Ray Charles." And it was Ray Charles' big band. I didn't say I've heard hundreds of big band records. I took the position, "Well, let's hear it together." Question, you were also a very sick child, but it seems it created a lucky break. Yeah, they told my mother three times he'll be dead in the morning. They didn't know I had peritonitis until it went to my appendix, which burst. I was poisoned all through my body. The surgeon was next door drinking in the pub because he'd gone off duty. He opened me up the best he could, and he saved my life. Imagine if he had had more to drink. But I think being that ill taught me that life goes on, and I was in bed for months. So to keep me busy, they brought us tambourines, maracas, and little 7-inch drums. It was a magic moment because once I hit that drum, I only wanted to be a drummer. We couldn't afford drums, but I ended up getting them, and all has been going well ever since. Final question. On February 9, 2024, that was the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' momentous appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show. What do you remember? I can't tell you how incredible it was. All the music I loved came from America. Country, blues, probably half the records I bought were Motown. It was always American music, and 60 years later, I'm still here talking about it. I was 22 when I joined the Beatles in 1962, and I was 30 when it was all over. We did 8 years, and look how much we packed in. We loved to work. Well, Paul loved to work more than all of us. John and I would be hanging out in the garden when the phone would ring. We were psychic. We knew it was him. "Hey, lads, should we go into the studio?" Otherwise, we'd have put out just 3 albums and then vanished. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, which country artist was originally a professional baseball player before starting a music career? Was that A, Johnny Cash, B, Charlie Pride, C, Willie Nelson, D, Garth Brooks, or E, Dolly Parton? And the correct answer is answer B, Charlie Pride. As noted by PBS.org, the 4th of 11 children, Charlie Pride grew up in a shotgun shack in the Mississippi Delta. His father was a sharecropper, and Charlie's earliest memories always included dreams of doing something other than picking cotton. I used to sit on the porch, and I'd look up at the clouds, and I said, "Boy, how'd it be to float on them clouds?" And I'd think of that, you know, when I was little. So when I saw Jackie Robinson going to the major leagues, I said, "Hey, that's my way out of the cotton field." Pride's ability as a pitcher landed him a spot in the Negro League's Memphis Red Sox when he was just 16. Brief stints with different leagues followed, including an initially promising season with the New York Yankees farm team before an injury sidelined him. It was while playing on a semi-pro team in Montana that Charlie, blessed with a deep, resonant voice and a longtime love of country music, began performing in local bars. Pride soon showed up in Nashville. There he caught the attention of producer Cowboy Jack Clement, who took him into the studio to work with the town's top musicians. Despite having professionally produced songs, Clement and Pride's manager had trouble finding a label to take him. Then in 1966, Chet Atkins convinced RCA executives to trust their ears and not worry about racial politics. Charlie's first singles were released without any mention of his race, and early publicity photos were withheld. Audiences were surprised at his live shows when he would walk out on stage for the first time. Often he recalls the venue would fall completely silent. You could drop a pin. I'd say, "Ladies and gentlemen, I realize it's kind of unique, me coming out here on a country music show wearing this permanent tan." And the minute I said that, big applause. I guess they said, "Well, let's sit back and see what he's got to offer." Once they heard me sing, they said, "Yeah, I don't care if he's green. I like his singing." His biggest hit, Kissin' Angel Good Morning spent 5 weeks atop the country charts and crossed over to the pop market. Charlie Pride was the first black member of the Grand Ole Opry since Dee Bailey decades earlier, the first black artist to have a number one country record, and the first artist of any race to win the Country Music Association's Male Vocalist Award 2 years in a row. One of the most successful country singers ever, he would go on to have 29 number one country hits, 52 top tens, and 12 gold albums. In 2000, Charlie Pride was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. Charlie Pride died in December of 2020. And the answer to our second question, who is the very first rock star to be featured simultaneously on the covers of both Time and Newsweek magazines? Was that A, Buddy Holly, B, Bruce Springsteen, C, Elton John, or D, Madonna? And the correct answer is answer B, Bruce Springsteen. As noted in OnThisDay.com, it was on this very day back in 1975 that Bruce Springsteen simultaneously made the cover of both Time and Newsweek magazines. And this was the very first time that had ever been accomplished by a rock star. So let's let Elton John close out today's program with Your Song. This was released in the U.S., by the way, on this very day back in 1970.
I was a sculptor, but then again, no, or a man who makes potions and love to travel and show. No, it's not much, but it's the best I can do. My gift is my song, and this one's for you.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the very next time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. So